There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. Another couple hours of live local talk and lots to do on today's show. I will say traffic-wise, as we get started with today's show, number one, let me check in with my friend Dalton, who is attempting to start his family vacation like right after the morning show today. He's with any of y'all that are sitting on the Dolly Parton Bridge, WKP Wilson, whatever you want. The stretch across the Delta there on 65. He's been there like more than a half hour or so, sitting right there, stuck northbound. So I don't know what exactly has stopped traffic up there. He said just barely crawling. Also, I got word here, Bayway slowdowns, no big surprise. And it's probably a good day to tell you it's a great day to take the causeway. Our buddy Brian Kane from Fairhope Brewing Company is going to join us coming up around 12:35 to talk more about taking the causeway and enjoying one of those great beers from Fairhope Brewing Company. So that's on the way. And yeah, just be aware, because watch yourselves. I ran to the house for like a second between shows today, and most people's driving brains are now also on vacation as well. Just say, not that it's new, it's a vacation weekend for a lot of folks, extended weekend, and they kind of check their brains at the door and head out. So do be aware out there. I want to see y'all all back here on Tuesday, and we'll talk more about that coming up. All right, as we start this hour, we mentioned it during Mobile Mornings, this is a conversation that I think a lot of us parents need to have as we answer questions from our children. I wish I could say, you know, this is not something we had to talk about in the past, but we have. But we have another discussion with the murders, and that's, you know, people call it an attack, the murders of the children and the teachers in Uvalde, Texas. And this is a conversation that, you know, I'm going to be confronted with, was a little bit this week with my children, will be to a greater degree, I'm sure, as we have days over the Memorial Day weekend to talk about it. And what do you tell your children? What do you tell your children about what happened in Uvalde? What do you tell them about their lives here, their school, their safety? It's a lot of tough questions here, and I'm lucky to have some expertise. Nicolette Harvey from AltaPoint, a therapist, administrator, Children's Psychiatric Hospital, somebody who has children, has to answer these questions, but also can look at it from a professional's angle. Thank you for being here. Thanks for helping out.
Thanks for having me, Sean. I appreciate it.
That's so every day you're working with children at AltaPoint, right?
That is correct. I am the director for our clinical services for our inpatient, more acute services for children. So we work with kids in psychiatric crisis, kids that are in a psychiatric residential setting, and kids that have an alternative school setting.
Okay. So you're dealing with the kids plenty. This is the tough part. You're a parent.
I am.
You got to – well, do you have – okay, let's start off with this. Do you have to tell them a dang thing? Do you have to broach – Nicolette, can I just pretend like this isn't happening and not engage my children at all with this?
Well, no.
Okay.
Honestly, because this is part of the society and the world that we live in. If we choose not to hold the cornerstone on the narrative with our children about events and incidents like this, we leave it open to other people. And when you don't have control about the language that goes on in your home and the communication that you have with your child, their trust can sometimes get broken because of that. If there's something big and major that went on in their life and or your life, and let's say they found out from a cousin or a friend, you know, they kind of come right back to, where's our relationship?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have an established trust. Our children look to us for their safety and security. So I do...
So even outside, and so from a personal thing, mm-hmm. I understand that what you're saying, to engage the children, make sure that they know that you're telling them you have that relationship. They don't have to go roundabout to find out. But in something that is removed. This is a news story. It is, now, I want to put it frankly here, my heart is broken. We've talked about it for days on this show. It is, 1,200 miles away from here to Uvalde, probably?
Yeah.
So make it great. It's not like it's in our backyard.
It's not in our backyard.
So there is at least a temptation, right? Not that it's right, to, if the child doesn't address it with you or doesn't see something, you might, maybe I'm speaking for myself, I might not want to engage them in that conversation.
Right. And I think it depends on the age of your child, their access to things. I mean, are we talking to 3-year-olds that don't have exposure to the news?
Right.
But
yeah,
if we're talking children, you know, ages kind of 11 and up, if they have a cellular phone, if they're on YouTube or they access anything that they see social media, and they're going to find out about it. It's going to be a discussion at school. You might even have had a teacher. I mean, we're just wrapping up the school year, I think, for most of our local schools. You might have even had a teacher that had a conversation after this happened, because it was something that was important to them to share with their class. So I think you have to gauge where your children are. Obviously, you're the expert on your own child. I always encourage parents to remember that you're the expert on your own child. So you have to follow their cues. With younger children, I think it's okay to just have a basic conversation related to what mom and dad in school's roles are in keeping kids safe. It's always serves as a good reminder, even if there isn't a mass casualty event that we're dealing with this week.
Right.
For younger children, and for those older children, especially going into teens and adolescents, they are going to be exposed to this. This is part of the world that we live in, where we kind of drink media, right?
You know,
nothing goes on anymore without it being publicized in every facet that you can imagine.
No,
it's not like when you and I were growing up and, you know, if I didn't watch the 6 o'clock news, I might not have known anything happened.
Right, and none of your friends saw it either, so they didn't tell
you.
Right,
we were all out playing together, so we weren't watching the 6 o'clock news.
But
this is not the society we live in today. Kids have too much access.
Yeah, that's for sure. Which is, so let's talk about this in kind of chronologically in a timeline here, because this is a subject right now that most of us adults are having trouble getting our minds around 100%. And dealing with, right? So you said 3-year-old. Listen, there's a certain point, right? Yeah. And like you said, you know your child, but in general benchmark terms, when is that point where you don't address, you know, where they're just, I mean, I'm not going to stop a toddler and have a discussion
about 100%.
The massacre at Uvalde.
Yeah,
right?
If you have a 2-year-old, you're probably,
you're not gonna have
you
that
hugged
discussion.
Him extra tight that night, you told him how much you loved him,
you
could say something like, mom and dad are always going to keep you safe.
There
you go, 100%. It's when they, you know.
But then you have the other spectrum, right? Like you have these teenage adolescents and teenagers.
Yeah.
So somewhere in between, I guess that's the telling thing when you make that switch from trying to just not even discuss it with them because their peers at 6 years old aren't discussing it, to getting ahead of this and talking to your children.
Well, and I think that goes back to being the expert on your child, because, you know, I've met some 5 and 6 year olds that can blow your mind in regards to their engagement and intelligence and what they pick up on. Kids listen.
Especially if you whisper.
Especially if you don't want them to hear it.
That's right. The more you whisper, the more they listen.
When you think you're having a private conversation, especially when you think that they're not around or they have those headphones on. And
correct.
Mine keeps one ear off the headphone at all times, so he can make sure.
Situational awareness.
Say, you know, ice cream, just in case he didn't hear it.
I've got some of those in my house. Yes. So you're right. But let's say a child now. So we can say, make that decision. Here's a child that's not engaged, doesn't have a peer group talking about it. Now to that group. Is there anything in that spectrum from somebody who is at the younger end of that engaged spectrum to your 18-year-old? You know?
Well, and we have to remember that school-aged children in today's society are doing these active shooter drills too. So, you know, we have to recognize that even if we think it's a child that's not exposed to media coverage about something, this conversation about what you do if a bad guy comes in the classroom, and I mean, we have teachers that pass out lollipops during active shooter drills because it's something that kids can put in their mouth and be quiet. So our kids have been exposed to this ongoing narrative about what happens at this point in our community.
Their whole childhood. And I agree, I've watched that with my children. But you know what, you and I had to do tornado drills, right? There's a difference between doing tornado drills where we get under our desk, which I don't know how that was ever going to work. We did tornado drills versus seeing coverage of a tornado ripping through a community. You see,
100%. How are you asking, how would a child, at what age does a child make that connection between the two?
This thing that I'm doing is a drill. It's almost like, you know, at a certain age, just repetitive. Teacher says we do this. We go over here. We stand over here.
We go to cafeteria. Yeah.
Versus, this is like that thing I saw on TV when I was walking through the living room.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. And so, once again, going back to being the expert in with your child, but school-aged children, once they hit 6, 7, 8 years old, they become acutely aware of their outside environments. So they are talking amongst themselves with peers. My kid will come home and say things like, "Oh, you won't believe the words I learned at after school care." I'm like, "Tell me about these words, and let's talk about when we don't use them because mom doesn't really want to go out for a conference."
Right.
So they are acutely aware of their environment. They're having conversations with older peers because your 6 year old is not just confined in that school day to just 6 year olds. They may be they may be running into 9 year olds in the library. There may be 11-year-olds, fifth graders that are the safety patrol officers talking about what's going on. So we like to think that our kids are kind of insulated in their little age bubbles, but that's not really how.
Okay, so don't be naive in that. Yeah. All right. And then I do wonder if there's a danger of the other side where I'm now engaging this child, and we know our children, but I'm engaging this child, and maybe I went too far.
100%.
Is that a thing?
No, that is completely a thing. I think that there are, we want to be careful not parentifying our children. We want to be careful in all aspects of our life of not giving our kids emotions and feelings and responsibilities that really should be delegated towards parents. Right?
Okay.
You don't get in a fight with your spouse and then have your child pick sides. Right?
Don't
do that because that's parentifying a child.
But do you over, is parentifying over-explain, or not even over-explaining, but maybe giving too much detail? Is there a chance of giving too much detail? It's like, okay, let me tell you what happened to Uvalde. And then the door was propped open. And we're going to get to that later in the show. Is that?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Because you want to be careful in educating your child and encouraging safety and security and addressing what's going on in an honest way so that they understand what it all means versus inducing anxiety. Kids don't need to know. Right now we have the screen behind us that's showing details that are coming out. And as every new detail that I see, I know as an adult, a pretty healthy, stable person that has good coping skills, it kind of makes my stomach turn. There's no way that I would be sharing the level of details with my 8-year-old child just because it's
so not, there is a spectrum. Yeah. Individual children, but in general, there's a spectrum of, first of all, if you engage them at all in this conversation, then when you do, how much you let them know.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree with that. I mean, and each child is going to be different, and each child is going to be different based on the access that you allow in your home setting. So, remember, if you have a kid that is 11, but he is, just watching TV independently, and you don't know what they're watching. Mm-hmm. We all have the parental controls on the YouTube channels, and the things still sneak in there. They may have more exposure to details like that, and we have to be prepared as the support person, as the safety and security officer of our children's lives, to address questions that they have.
He's just joining us, talking to Nicolette Harvey from AltaPoint, talking about how to talk to children about this tragedy and others. What about a situation where it's missed and they did see it, right? Mm-hmm. Now. At first, we're playing defense. We're trying to make sure we're the controllers of that information. But let's say they did walk through the living room and a horrible detail was on, or they were at Timmy's house and saw the thing, or whatever, or their sibling told them about it in detail. Now they have it. Coping with this, you said that earlier. Mm-hmm. Are there coping? How do you address that with a child to know what to tell them to cope with this? Help me here.
I think it starts with always going back to that first reminder of, this is something that happened, when a mass casualty incident happens, it is so overwhelming. You can think of Uvalde, you think of the mass shooting that happened in Buffalo. Go all the way back to when I was a child and we had the Amtrak disaster here.
Right here, Bio-Connaught,
all of these things are just horrific tragedies that children do hear, but I was... Mm-hmm. I'm not going to age myself, but I was a child when that happened, but was able to understand when the Amtrak disaster happened, what that meant.
You're not aging yourself. I was in college.
Okay.
So, you're not aging yourself.
I wasn't quite in college.
Yes, yeah.
But it was, it is important to be, once again, I said you're the security officer of your home. So going back to the child and addressing the incident as it happened, explaining that there are details that may cause you anxiety. There are details that may make you feel sad, validating those feelings about them, and then always returning the conversation about what we're doing to protect our children, because our role is to help them learn and understand, but also help them feel safe and secure. That's how your brain grows.
It does seem super amplified, though. So, if you talk about the Amtrak disaster, that's one you remember from being a child, but what if the next day you're supposed to go ride the Sunset Limited to, the second train
100%.
There? Being, this thing that you could look at these stories if they're half a world away and there's something that's not part of everyday life for a child, it could be tough. Mm-hmm. But I just think about the situation that these are children, as I've said, babies, at this place, children, and they go to a school, and this is things that our kids do. I mean, it all matches up,
yeah.
Right? It's not, you know, if a volcano has blown and children were killed somewhere in the world, it's a horrible thing. You're sad as a family. You pray for them. But the kids aren't in that scenario.
Right,
you know,
we're not sending them to a volcano tomorrow.
Right. So.
And that was the first conversation, honestly, I had with the educators that I work with when I got to school the next day is, school is compulsory. Like, I don't have the option to send my child to school. The government says I'm sending that kid to
That's
school.
That's right.
So, yes, it was, I think that was super hard for parents to wrap their heads around all week is there's a situation that feels unsafe at this moment. Even if it is 1,200 miles away, it still is something that hits home because we all have children.
It's
we all
go to schools. There's the teachers. There's the school. There's
exactly.
a classroom. There's these things that look so familiar.
100%. And we have to send our children to this place. We have to send the children to this place that at this moment doesn't feel like is meeting the basic need of safety and security for them. And so if we're feeling that, obviously the kids are feeling it too. So that's why I think it is important to be acutely aware of where your child is and having this discussion and encouraging safety and recognizing, you know, always look for the helpers was the Mr. Rogers thing. Encouraging them in the school setting. If something were to go wrong, there are adults there that are there to protect you. We have two teachers as a demonstration of that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There were adults
protecting those children. Yeah, very much so. So over this long weekend, I mean, you've given us some things to think about. First of all, don't respond to every child the same way,
right?
You know your child.
You're the expert on your child.
But there is a point where pretending this thing didn't happen is not. Am I taking that correct?
Yeah,
that's not going to help either.
You're completely yes. That is my professional recommendation. Is there is a point, especially in your older children, your engaged children, your children that actively. You know, there comes a point where you're playing the radio every day and then your kid just starts singing a song that they heard. And I was like, how were you listening to that? When
yes.
you have those kids that you recognize listen, they are going to hear these words. They're going to hear words like mass shootings, like, you know, children murdered. They're going to hear words like mass casualty at school, mass casualty in a school. That's a hard sentence to say
as
a parent,
as
a professional, as a person that has devoted her life to working in children, saying mass casualty.
And you're having trouble saying it. Can you imagine all of us that do other stuff?
Right.
You know?
And honestly, I don't know that my training and education makes me any more prepared to deal with this in a home setting because that all gets thrown out the window when you're a mom, when you're looking at your kids, you know,
it
is important for us to control the narrative for them though, because we are their safety and security. You know, when you think about kids, you know, especially older kids, they hate all our rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when you have a teenager, you never knew how little you knew until you had a teenager.
My IQ went down,
you don't know anything.
Correct.
But honestly, those rules, those standards that you're putting in place for them, including around the conversation and the behaviors that we have as in response to this, make them feel safe. They make their little brain that is still growing and still learning and still trying to become its best self feel more safe and secure. So the more that we can have a control of the narrative, the more we can have a conversation with our kids, the more we can look for their cues and their signs and their symptoms that may be popping up and address them with kind of an open ears. You know, kids... My kid will talk to me endlessly about Pokemon cards.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to hear about Pokemon cards every
minute? No, but you want to talk to your kid.
Absolutely not. But I want my kid to talk to me when it becomes important, so I listen.
Very good. I'm going to do a lot of listening this weekend. I think a lot of us will be doing that and hopefully being able to give the information to our kids, our children that we need. Nicolette, thank you.
You're welcome, John.
So Nicolette Harvey with UltiPoint. And as we, go through this in the weeks to come. If there are more questions that come up, I may have you come back, you know, and talk about that.
And I do want to say, obviously, if there is a situation where you or your child feel too overwhelmed, you're seeing your child engage in some behaviors that are very atypical and concerning, maybe self-harm behaviors, if there's a child that reports having suicidal ideations, things like that, that AltaPoint is here. We have a 24-hour helpline that can connect you to services. We have acute services for children. We have acute services for adults. So you can reach out to us by calling 450-2211.
Which is online, too.
Yep. You can go online, and you will be connected with a professional crisis counselor that will help get you directed. We have Bay Point Hospital is a great resource for Mobile. If when in doubt, walk in. We want kids to be safe. That's why we exist.
Well done. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
All right, Nicolette Harvey, and we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. We'll get to those texts next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile on this Friday. Traffic-wise, by the way, here's a segue. You know, if you had downloaded the FM Talk 106.5 app, if you're one of those people that are lucky enough to have already done it, which I'd love y'all to do, you can go to the live traffic map on the app. Like Dalton, who is was trying to get away for a vacation, who's I don't think made it across the Delta yet. Dalton, you know, you can check that traffic map on our app and see what's holding you up in front of you. You check that out. Of course, 56 hours a week of live local programming. Those podcasts coming through first on our app. You can use it to find show schedules. You can also text us from there, call us from there, use the TalkBack feature to leave us a message. All that on the FM Talk 106.5 app. If you're an iPhone user, go to the App Store and just look for FM TALK 1065. If you're an Android user, do the same thing over at Google Play. All right, a lot of text. We're going to get to some of these, but when we return from the news here and come back from the news, I've got the presser that aired, like 45 minutes ago or so. And it went on for quite a while with questions. We're going to get the beginning of this, the press conference from Uvalde, Texas, where they go kind of item by item for the things we've been talking about the last couple of days. We'll roll that presser, and then we'll get your reaction coming up later on in the show. Also, in just a few minutes, my buddy Brian Kane from Fairhope Brewing Company is going to join me. Is there ever a time to tell you to take the causeway? I mean, both ways. Number one, take the causeway right now because of Bayway crawling. But number two, what a great way to take the causeway with you this weekend. Great. What are my two top favorite beers from Fairhope Brewing Company is Take the Causeway. We'll talk about what they have going on with Fairhope Brewing Company. They're at the brewery, in stores, and the weekend ahead. We'll do that coming up in just a little bit. Plus that presser from Uvalde, Texas, all on the way right here. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you here. Yeah, we've been updating traffic, heck, since kind of we never stopped after the morning show as it's big getaway weekend. People heading out for the extended weekend with Memorial Day on Monday. Reporting the traffic issues already. Our own Dalton Orwig. It's not like he's in the traffic vehicle, or like he's out scanning it. He's actually trying to get away with the family. He's been stuck on 65 there crossing the Delta for a long time. And he mentioned, because Leanna just showed me a picture of people fishing, right? We've had this happen before, but people fishing from up there on the 65 span across the Delta. If you're the fishing person that's making those pictures, you're like two, I think Dalton said you're two vehicles in front of him. He's watching the people fishing around him. That's how long traffic's been sitting still. Bayway, a little bit better, but it's been pretty crunchy since early this morning. So what a great time to take the causeway in so many ways. My buddy Brian Kane from Fairhope Brewing Company joining us, probably to remind us in both ways to take the causeway. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Sean. That's very good advice year-round, but especially over the summer.
It is, it's these Fridays, man. It's always bad, and then we add in a holiday, and people stack up there. So let's talk about what's good. Number one, taking the causeway, passing by all those people sitting there, and then taking the causeway. One of my favorite beers from y'all. So let's talk some beers. Let's talk about what's going on at Fairhope Brewing Company.
Yeah, you know, we've got a lot of obviously the causeway just comes in perfectly, especially over the summer here, and like I said, in mindset and as being a good beer. It's actually on tap at most of the restaurants on the causeway, Felix's Bluegill, I think at Original Oyster House. So, yeah, even if you get stuck in a little bit of traffic, you can just pull off, grab you some crab claws or something, and enjoy a beer.
I love it. And if we're going to be somebody who's going to take the causeway, but we then going to go somewhere else, you know, picking up some of these tasty Fairhope Brewing Company beers is pretty easy, Brian. They're in every store I look in.
Yeah, you know, we've had a good relationship with our Budweiser distributor, Bud Busch, down here, getting our beers into, you know, the Rouse's, Publix, Piggly Wiggly, the small stores, just about everywhere everywhere you can buy beer down in lower Alabama, you know, it's our goal to have a product in there. Might not be all of them, but at least give you one option if one of our Pelicans sitting in the cooler there to pick up.
Also, you got, like, for people to understand what y'all do, you've got these beers that we see all the time, but y'all also have specialty beers, seasonal beers you work on.
That's exactly right. We we have 15 taps at our tap room, so we have a lot of beers that really don't make it out beyond the tap room area. But what we started doing just last year was coming up with a kind of a bigger production seasonal that we actually put into cans and got out into stores. And we are just on the cusp of Blue Steel, which is a blueberry and lemon sour. It is it's borderline Kool-Aid with a little tart finish. It is a fantastic beer for hot weather.
Okay, so if somebody is not, you know, maybe they're going to stock up for the weekend, right? And they're going to get some different palates around the house. I mean, you and I led off with Take the Causeway. You know, obviously, super favorite. But would you add some cheap sunglasses? What would you put in the mix? If you had to get four, we're going to get 4 6-packs to entertain over the weekend. What are we getting?
You know, I tell you, I wouldn't. I love the Causeway IPA. I don't know that it's necessarily a 95-degree beach beer because it's 8%.
It's a nighttime beer. It's a cook and dinner beer.
It'd be one of those where you have a few while you're sitting in your chair, and then you get up to go out in the Gulf, and you have a hard time getting there.
That's so, right. It's a nighttime beer.
Cheap sunglasses is probably your day drinking option. It is our lightest beer that we have. It's about 4. I think it's about 4.2% on the alcohol front, so it's right around your Bud Miller type beers. Super light and refreshing. It is a great summer beer.
Very good. So we put that in. Maybe take the cut. And you think that the Blue Steel, the other out of our 4 6-packs, you put the Blue Steel?
Blue Steel is a great option during the day also. You can maybe save some Causeways for the nightcap. You know, we also have Fair Oak 51, which is a great option. It's a pale ale, so it is a little less hoppy than the IPA, but it still has a good kick to it. Lower alcohol content as well. So it's a... It is a real nice middle-of-the-road beer. If you still want something with a hoppy kick, it is a really great option.
All right. You've given people their shopping list as they head through the store this evening or stop at any of our local watering holes, and especially Fairhope Brewing Company. Managing exactly. Partner of Fairhope Brewing, my buddy Brian Kane. Thanks, man. Thanks for being on with us, and you have a great weekend yourself.
Hey, thanks so much, John. I hope Dalton finally gets to where he's going.
Yeah, or somebody lends him a fishing rod.
What? He gets the fish out of the deal, exactly. I hope he's got a nice chef.
Good stuff, man. Have a great one.
All right. Thank you.
There he is, Brian Kane. He's going to join us. He or Jim or the crew from Fairhope Brewing is going to they're going to join us before these big weekends as we talk about what's on tap or what's in the stores, maybe to entertain folks over the weekend. All right. I mentioned at the beginning of the hour we would get at least part of the presser that ran about 45 minutes ago in Uvalde, Texas. They address a lot of the questions that have been asked. They also give some timelines in this. We're going to get the first part of the presser. If we have time later on, we will get the Q&A from that presser. So let's go ahead and roll this. So this is, like I said, just about 45 minutes, maybe an hour old, and taking place there in Uvalde.
My name is Stephen McCraw, Director of Texas Department of Public Safety. On Tuesday, the District Attorney for the 38th Judicial District, Christina Mitchell, requested that the Texas Rangers under the Department of Public Safety assume lead responsibility of this horrific murder of 19 innocent children and 2 adults. Our goal today is to provide the parents, the community of Uvalde, the public, as much information as we can on where we are on the investigation. We're here to report the facts as we know them now, not to defend what was done or to criticize what was done or the actions taken. I'll begin first and foremost with the timeline as we know it. The second timeline I'll discuss is the 911 timeline. Then we'll talk about the relevant social or digital media footprint of the subject. Then we'll also have plenty of time for questions at that point. At 11:27, we know from video evidence at 11:27, the exterior door suspected of what the where we knew the shooter entered, Ramos, was propped open by a teacher. 11:28, the suspect vehicle crashes into the ditch, as previously described. The teacher runs to the room 132 to retrieve a phone, and that same teacher walks back to the exit door, and door remains propped open. There were two males, as reported by Regional Director Escalon yesterday. There were two males at a funeral home that when they heard the crash, they went to the crash scene. When they arrived at the crash scene, before they got there, they saw a man with a gun exit the passenger side with a backpack, and they immediately began running. Ramos began shooting at him. Did not hit him. One of the males fell when he was running. Both males returned to the funeral home while they're running. And then again, we see through video, teacher reemerges inside the school in panic and apparently calls 911. 911 call at 11:30. There was a crash, man with a gun. 11:31, the suspect reaches last row of vehicles in the school parking lot. 11:31, the suspect shooting began at the school while patrol vehicles got to the funeral home. I'll point out where it is.
Crash vehicles over here. Suspect hiding behind a vehicle. Started walking down, shooting into the classroom.
There was discussion early on that an ISD, consolidated ISD for Uvalde, had officer, was a resource officer, and had confronted the subject. That did not happen, as R.D. Escalon talked about yesterday. It was certainly stated in preliminary interviews, but often these preliminary interviews and a cursory walkthrough doesn't reveal the type of information, and certainly, you know, police officers, like anyone else, under stress, sometimes witnesses get it wrong. But the bottom line is that officer was not on scene, not on campus, but had heard the 911 call with a man with a gun, drove immediately to the area, sped to what he thought was the man with a gun, to the back of the school, which turned out to be a teacher and not the suspect. In doing so, he drove right by the suspect, who was hunkered down behind a vehicle, where he began shooting at the school. At 11:31, the suspect shooting in between the vehicle is when it began, while the patrol vehicle gets to the funeral home. Multiple shots are fired outside the school at 11:31. Patrol car accelerates in the parking lot, drives by the shooter. That's exactly what I was talking about. It was the ISD officer at that time. He passes and then leaves the camera view. There's multiple shots fired at the school at 11:32, at 11:32:27, at 11:32:36. At 11:33 is when the suspect entered the school at the door that I'm pointing to now. At 11:33, the suspect begins shooting into room 111 or 112. It's not possible to determine from the video angle that we have at this point in time. We do know this, that he shot more than 100 rounds based on the audio evidence at that time, at least 100 rounds. He entered at 11:33, he started shooting in the classrooms, 111 and 112. At 11:35, three police officers entered the same door as the suspect entered. All three of those police officers worked for the Uvalde Police Department. They were later followed by another four, a team of Uvalde police officers, three, and also a county deputy sheriff. So a total of seven officers were on the scene. The three initial police officers that arrived went directly to the door, and two received grazing wounds at that time from the suspect while the door was closed. At 11:37, there was more gunfire. Another 16 rounds was fired at 11:37. One at 11:37 and 16 seconds, 11:38, 11:40, 11:44. At 11:51, a police sergeant and USB agents started to arrive. At 12:03, you know, officers continued to arrive in the hallway, and there were as many as 19 officers at that time in that hallway. At 12:15, we know that BORTAC members arrive. Not the entire BORTAC, but members of BORTAC, along with shields. At 12:21, the suspect fired again, was believed to be at the door. At 11:21, law enforcement moved down the hallway. At 11:50, they breached the door using keys that they're able to get from the janitor because both doors were locked. Though both of the classrooms that he shot into were locked when officers arrived. They killed the suspect at that time. And now I'd like to go over the 911 timeline. I warn you, it's not. It's better that I read it than you listen to it. The caller identified, I'll not say her name, but she was in room 112, called 911 at 12:03. The duration of the call was 1 minute and 23 seconds. She identified herself and whispered, she's in room 112. At 12:10, she called back in room 12, advised her multiple are dead. 12:13, again she called on the phone. Again at 12:16, she's called back and said there's 8 to 9 students alive. At 12:19, a 911 call was made, and another person in room 111 called. I will not say her name. She hung up when another student told her to hang up. At 12:21, you could hear over the 911 call that 3 shots were fired. At 12:36, the 911 call, it lasted for 21 seconds. The initial caller called back, student, child, called back, and was told to stay on the line and be very quiet. She told 911 that he shot the door. At approximately 12:43 and 12:47, she asked 911 to please send the police now. At 12:46, she said she could hear the police next door. At 12:50, shots are fired. They can be heard over the 911 call. And at 12:51, is very loud and sounds like the officers are moving children out of the room. At that time, the first child that called was outside before the call cuts off. Additional information that we have is that there are 58 total magazines at the school related to the crime scene. 11 of those magazines were inside the school. 3 were on the suspect's body. 2 in room 112. 6 inside room 111. 5 were on the ground. 1 was in the rifle. There were 32 magazines outside the school, but on school property. 1 just outside the school building and 31 in the suspect's backpack that he did not take into the classrooms with him. There's 15 magazines at the crash site. There were 2 magazines at the suspect's residence for a total of 60 magazines. He had purchased and had a total of 1,657 total rounds of ammunition. 315 of those rounds were inside the school. 142 of those were spent cartridges. 173 were live rounds. 922 were outside of the school, but on school property. 22 of those were spent cartridges. 900 were live rounds. 422 were at the crash site. 22 were spent cartridges. 420 of those were live rounds. There's 35 spent law enforcement cartridges total in the school. 8 of those were in the hallway. 27 were inside the classroom. 111 where the suspect was killed. I mentioned that I'm going to go over quickly my digital timeline. One thing we talked about early, and I want to correct something that was said early on in the investigation, is that he posted, okay, on Facebook publicly that he was going to kill his, he was going to shoot his grandmother, that, and secondly after that he had shot her, and the third that he was going to go shoot up a school. That did not happen. It was actually on a message. It was a Facebook application, messenger application to somebody else that he had a conversation with. We know that through his digital media footprint, and I'll just do by date time, that Ramos asked his sister to help him buy a gun. She flatly refused. That was in September of 21. He made, I'll avoid some of these and get to the, he had Instagram, a four group chat, and it was discussed that Ramos being a school shooter. That was on February 28th of 2022. On March 1st of 2022, there was an Instagram he had with four people. It was a chat. He discussed him buying a gun. On March 3rd, 2022, there was another four-person chat.
I tell you what, let's run to the news here, and we'll come back. More of the second part of the presser coming up next hour with some of the questions back and forth. Plus, I check out your text on this. So there's so many moving parts to this, so many questions. We're at the beginning of understanding this murder of these babies in Uvalde, Texas. And we'll try to get more of that pressure when we come back right here. It's Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Glad to have you along. Phone number, text line, 251-343-0106. Hey, want y'all to say hello to my buddy, David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. Talk about those. You keep finding, at a certain point, it doesn't become unicorns for y'all because you find these vehicles so often for folks.
Well, we do have a unicorn right now, actually, but it's already sold. I bought a 2020 Corvette. Day before yesterday, black with camel guts, 2,000 miles. I mean, where do you find a car like that? And it's $20,000 more than what it was when it was new. Wow. We've got a customer that called me the other day looking for a certain vehicle, and a little Ford Escape. And we found them one and went and picked it up yesterday, and they're taking delivery of it today. So that's a pretty quick little turnaround.
Yeah, it is. And we talk about the great selection that you'll have at LCM. And I've bought from stuff you had in selection. I've also had you headhunt vehicles for me. I mean, you can do both.
The headhunting, it's fun for us because it's a challenge, especially on something like this Corvette. But the other cars, you know, we find dealers that are, you know, have something that they haven't had any luck with that you may want, and it's the perfect car, and it works out great for everybody.
All right. Well, tell folks how to come find you.
We're on Highway 90 at Plantation in Theodore. You can give us a call at 251-375-0068 or go to the website, lcmmotorcars.com. Credit app, everything's right there for you.
I love it. David, I appreciate it, man. Have a good weekend.
You too, buddy.
All right. David McCrary checking in from LCM Motor Cars. And we're coming right back next hour. We'll play some more of that press conference when the questions were asked by a throng of media there in Uvalde, Texas. Also read through some of your text. And coming up in the second half of next hour, our buddy Mike Bunn from Blakely State Park joins us. Remember that discussion we were having here before the State Park Amendment? We were kind of going through things before Tuesday. And the State Park Amendment did pass, but it was pointed out that Blakely State Park didn't fall under that funding. Why is that? Well, we'll find out from the man in charge coming up.